brought to you by Penguin.
Sexton Blake's Allies by Mark Hodder, read by Colin Mace. Baker Street, London. Brighter today, Sexton Blake announced as I entered his consulting room. A welcome respite from the rain. Come in, sit down. Would you care for some wine? Brandy, coffee, cigarettes, pipe. Blake seemed always to have an indulgence of one sort or another on the go. It hadn't occurred to me before, but this Epicurean aspect of his personality, whilst never being directly alluded to in any of the stories I'd read, was evident in the majority of them. It would have killed a normal man. "Thank you," I said, taking up my, by now, customary position in the saddleback armchair opposite his own. He poured a generous glass of red and handed it to me. "Good health," he murmured. The wine was superb, but I coughed and almost spluttered it out through my nose when there came a scratching at the door, and it was pushed aside by an enormous bloodhound. Remarkably, the dog, a truly magnificent beast, shouldered the portal shut before padding across the room. It sniffed my hand, slumped onto the hearthrug, and gave a prodigious yawn. "Your mouth is hanging open," Blake observed. I thought he was addressing the hound. He wasn't. I stammered. It can't be Pedro. Surely it...
"A descendant of the original," Blake said. "From a long and illustrious line, all specially bred and trained to emulate the talents of their late and lamented forebear. Surely it occurred to you that the Pedro of the later stories couldn't possibly be the same as the Pedro of the earlier?"
Yes, I suppose. As if I hadn't considered that the Sexton Blake of the 1960s couldn't possibly be the Sexton Blake of the 1890s. I gazed at Pedro. Sprawled and contented, he gazed back. Blake interrupted my inexpressible ruminations. "What have you brought for me today?"
I turned my attention to my briefcase and withdrew from it a binder. As I passed it to him, I said,
"You touched on the subject as I was departing yesterday. Your allies."
"Splendid," he said. "Happy memories.
You told me that something called the credibility gap gave rise to the master crooks and also to those possessing the wherewithal to oppose them. Can you explain exactly what it is?"
He tasted his wine and pulled a cigar from his pocket. A brief exchange of micro-gestures clarified that, as on previous occasions, I had no objection to him smoking, but no desire to do so myself.
"A theory of mine," he said, employing a tool to snip the end from his cigar. "A state of consciousness wherein cognitive dissonance is so severe that a person experiencing it can find no means to cope with the unfamiliar and so develops what might be termed a blind spot in regard to it. Denial. In conjunction with this, a converse state arises that prospers under the same conditions and which employs incredulity to further its own ends. Thus, for example, the often very eccentric Master Crooks, who thrived in the wake of the Great War, and the Scotland Yard men who could neither comprehend nor deal with them.
And you, Mr. Blake, do you operate within this credibility gap?"
"Most certainly," he answered, and his tone seemed to add, "more than you will ever know." "My allies and I managed to transcend the cognitive dissonance that was gripping the masses, or we at least achieved a high degree of functionality whilst under its influence." While Blake was speaking, I was scratching my ballpoint pen across my notepad at high speed. My handwriting a tangled scrawl. I couldn't write fast enough. Where food for thought was concerned, Blake was serving me a veritable banquet.
"Loseley," I murmured. "Sir Richard Loseley was the first and one of the most notable of your supporters. He appeared in 1907.
"I had the author Cecil Hayter write up the cases in which he was involved. Loseley was my oldest friend. We were at school and university together."
I noted that slip, is, not was, and filed it away for later
Sample complete. Ready to continue?